Scottish Qualifications Authority, National Qualifications 2014. English for Speakers of Other Languages, Intermediate 2. Section A, Listening. Recording 1. Listen to the talk. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 1, before you hear the recording. Are you ready, Graham? Okay. Give me a second to focus the camera. Right. This is Graham Baker, Class 5K3 History, and he's going to do his presentation. It's the 13th of March. Graham, carry on when you're ready.
Sure. Okay. The title of my presentation is Berwick, My Hometown. I was born and grew up in Berwick, and I lived there until my family moved up here 2 years ago. So, how many of you here know where Berwick is? Okay, most of you. For those who don't know, it's on the east coast, on the border between Scotland and England. Its full name is Berwick-upon-Tweed, because it's on the River Tweed. Now, on the east side of Britain, the lower part of the River Tweed forms the border between the countries. That was established, like most of the rest of the border, round about the year 1000. Berwick grew up on the north side of the river, where it meets the sea, and in time became a major Scottish port. Well, things went on for the next 300 years, but then war started between Scotland and England. In 1296, the English king, Edward I, invaded Scotland. He captured Berwick, killed all the people, and replaced them with English settlers. Sometime later, the Scots took the town back, and over the next couple of hundred years, Berwick changed hands 13 times until the English captured it again in 1482. And since then, it stayed in England. So, although Berwick is north of the river, it's politically in England, and has been for over 500 years, much longer, by the way, than it was ever part of Scotland. However, the fact is that Berwick is much closer to Edinburgh than it is to London. Also, there are many more people living near the border on the Scottish side than the English side. If you travel south, it's 30 miles to the next town. On the Scottish side, there are many places within 30 miles. So, Berwick has always had close associations with Scotland. The football team, Berwick Rangers, play in the Scottish League. This has nothing to do with feelings of nationality. It's just a question of not having to travel so far to matches. But the whole place is mixed up like that. Obviously, most pupils in Berwick High School live in England. But there are some whose families have crossed the border. Those who live in the English side have to pay university fees, while those in the Scottish side don't. The local doctors have patients on both sides of the border, but that isn't true of the hospitals. So patients near Berwick on the Scottish side will travel over 20 miles to Kelso Hospital, rather than being taken just down the road to Berwick Infirmary. Estate agents in Berwick deal with property on both sides of the border. But they have to use solicitors qualified either in England or Scotland to do the legal work because of the different laws. From time to time, there are calls for Berwick to return to Scotland. However, I really doubt if that will happen. As I said, the town started on the north side of the River Tweed, but it's long since spread across the river. So if it returned to Scotland, the border couldn't be the river, but south of it, probably a few miles south to give the town a bit of space. And that new border would have to be projected across the North Sea, which would result in many square miles of the sea being transferred to Scotland. Now, we're not just talking about water. That sea is rich in oil, and there's some good fishing there too. And I can't imagine London agreeing to move the sea border. So I think Berwick will stay in England, but it'll always be Scottish in some ways. Thanks a lot.
Are you ready, Graham? Okay. Give me a second to focus the camera. Right. This is Graham Baker, Class 5K3 History, and he's going to do his presentation. It's the 13th of March. Graham, carry on when you're ready.
Sure. Okay. The title of my presentation is Berwick, My Hometown. I was born and grew up in Berwick, and I lived there until my family moved up here 2 years ago. So, how many of you here know where Berwick is? Okay, most of you. For those who don't know, it's on the east coast, on the border between Scotland and England. Its full name is Berwick-upon-Tweed, because it's on the River Tweed. Now, on the east side of Britain, the lower part of the River Tweed forms the border between the countries. That was established, like most of the rest of the border, round about the year 1000. Berwick grew up on the north side of the river, where it meets the sea, and in time became a major Scottish port. Well, things went on for the next 300 years, but then war started between Scotland and England. In 1296, the English king, Edward I, invaded Scotland. He captured Berwick, killed all the people, and replaced them with English settlers. Sometime later, the Scots took the town back, and over the next couple of hundred years, Berwick changed hands 13 times until the English captured it again in 1482. And since then, it stayed in England. So, although Berwick is north of the river, it's politically in England, and has been for over 500 years, much longer, by the way, than it was ever part of Scotland. However, the fact is that Berwick is much closer to Edinburgh than it is to London. Also, there are many more people living near the border on the Scottish side than the English side. If you travel south, it's 30 miles to the next town. On the Scottish side, there are many places within 30 miles. So, Berwick has always had close associations with Scotland. The football team, Berwick Rangers, play in the Scottish League. This has nothing to do with feelings of nationality. It's just a question of not having to travel so far to matches. But the whole place is mixed up like that. Obviously, most pupils in Berwick High School live in England. But there are some whose families have crossed the border. Those who live in the English side have to pay university fees, while those in the Scottish side don't. The local doctors have patients on both sides of the border, but that isn't true of the hospitals. So patients near Berwick on the Scottish side will travel over 20 miles to Kelso Hospital, rather than being taken just down the road to Berwick Infirmary. Estate agents in Berwick deal with property on both sides of the border, but they have to use solicitors qualified either in England or Scotland to do the legal work because of the different laws. From time to time, there are calls for Berwick to return to Scotland. However, I really doubt if that will happen. As I said, the town started on the north side of the River Tweed, but it's long since spread across the river. So if it returned to Scotland, the border couldn't be the river, but south of it, probably a few miles south to give the town a bit of space. And that new border would have to be projected across the North Sea, which would result in many square miles of the sea being transferred to Scotland. Now, we're not just talking about water. That sea is rich in oil, and there's some good fishing there too. And I can't imagine London agreeing to move the sea border. So I think Berwick will stay in England, but it'll always be Scottish in some ways. Thanks a lot.
Recording 2. Listen to the radio discussion. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 2, before you hear the recording.
So, Sanjeev, you'd say that the future of the Indian community in Glasgow is secure?
Yes, I think so.
Great. OK. Just a reminder that you're listening to the Nick Maxton Show on your very own Radio Kelvin. I've been discussing the history of the Indian community in Glasgow with my first guest, Sanjeev Patel. Now, Sanjeev, I hope you can stay with me for the next half an hour or so because my second guest has just arrived. And it's a very warm welcome to Rhianna Robertson, who's here to talk about pets. Hi, Rhianna.
Hello, Nick.
Now, Rhianna, you're here representing a voluntary organisation called Pets as Therapy. Care to tell us something about it?
Of course. Well, in Pets as Therapy, we arrange for pets and their owners to visit hospitals, hospices, care homes, and so on.
Pets as Therapy. Am I right in thinking that might be an acronym? PAT. Pat.
Of course. Pat the pet. Most people like animals, and often when they're in hospitals and care homes, they miss the pets they had at home. And it's really good for them to meet, well, let's say, a nice cuddly dog.
Interesting.
But it's more than that. Pets can help patients suffering from clinical depression or children who might have a dog or cat phobias. Like our name says, therapy. Pets are good for people. It's been clinically proved that patting a dog or stroking a cat can help to reduce stress levels.
Right. Sanjeev, what do you think about this?
Absolutely fine. Sounds good to me.
Have you got a pet yourself?
Yes, We've got a cat. The kids love her. We've had her for years. But I'll be the first to admit that not many Indian families do keep pets. Things are changing, though. Okay. Living in a village in India, where the nearest vet is miles away, can make owning a dog quite difficult. And if dogs are going to live a long, healthy life, they may need to see a vet occasionally. Also, a lot of dogs have rabies. It's a killer disease for humans, and it means that many people are put off dogs. They just don't want to be near them. Also, for a lot of people, their main concern is feeding their family, and feeding a dog is just beyond their budget. All of these things might condition your attitude to pets.
That's true.
On the other hand, if you've grown up in a bungalow in Glasgow, like I did, with plenty of vets around and no rabies, you might feel differently.
Yes, good point.
Actually, things are changing in many developing countries. The middle classes are getting into the idea. You know, buy a house, buy a car, buy a dog. They all show your higher position in society. Of course, many dogs are still kept as watchdogs. They live outside the house and are often chained up. But more and more people are keeping dogs as pets. Did you know, Nick, that the fastest growing market for pet food in the world is India?
That's interesting. But to get back to pets as therapy, I take it people use their own pets. You don't supply them.
That's right.
And what kind of pets are we talking about? Is it only dogs and cats?
Yes, they're the most suitable.
Well, let's say I have a dog and I want to get it signed up for pets as therapy. What do I do?
Well, the dog would be checked to see that it's well trained and sociable. Also, we'd want a note from the vet to say it's in good health. Then, if that's okay, you get an official badge and there's even a special yellow coat the dog can wear if you like. And then the organiser would start arranging visits to hospitals and so on.
That's great. Thanks for coming along today. So, if you have a dog or cat and are interested in joining Pets as Therapy, you can contact Rihanna at... So, Sanjeev, you'd say that the future of the Indian community in Glasgow is secure?
Yes, I think so.
Great. OK. Just a reminder that you're listening to the Nick Maxton Show on your very own Radio Kelvin. I've been discussing the history of the Indian community in Glasgow with my first guest, Sanjeev Patel. Now, Sanjeev, I hope you can stay with me for the next half an hour or so because my second guest has just arrived. And it's a very warm welcome to Rihanna Robertson, who's here to talk about pets. Hi, Rihanna.
Hello, Nick.
Now, Rihanna, you're here representing a voluntary organisation called Pets as Therapy. Care to tell us something about it?
Of course. Well, in Pets as Therapy, we arrange for pets and their owners to visit hospitals, hospices, care homes and so on.
Pets as Therapy. Am I right in thinking that might be an acronym? PAT. PAT.
Of course. Pat the Pet. Most people like animals. And often, when they're in hospitals and care homes, they miss the pets they had at home. And it's really good for them to meet, well, let's say, a nice cuddly dog.
Interesting.
But it's more than that. Pets can help patients suffering from clinical depression or children who might have a dog or cat phobias. Like our name says, therapy. Pets are good for people. It's been clinically proved that patting a dog or stroking a cat can help to reduce stress levels.
Right. Sanjeev, what do you think about this?
Absolutely fine. Sounds good to me.
Have you got a pet yourself?
Yes. We've got a cat. The kids love her. We've had her for years. But I'll be the first to admit that not many Indian families do keep pets. Things are changing, though. Okay. Living in a village in India, where the nearest vet is miles away, can make owning a dog quite difficult. And if dogs are going to live a long, healthy life, they may need to see a vet occasionally. Also, a lot of dogs have rabies. It's a killer disease for humans, and it means that many people are put off dogs. They just don't want to be near them. Also, for a lot of people, their main concern is feeding their family, and feeding a dog is just beyond their budget. All of these things might condition your attitude to pets.
That's true.
On the other hand, if you've grown up in a bungalow in Glasgow, like I did, with plenty of vets around and no rabies, you might feel differently.
Yes, good point.
Actually, things are changing in many developing countries. The middle classes are getting into the idea. You know, buy a house, buy a car, buy a dog. They all show your higher position in society. Of course, many dogs are still kept as watchdogs. They live outside the house and are often chained up. But more and more people are keeping dogs as pets. Did you know, Nick, that the fastest growing market for pet food in the world is India?
That's interesting. But to get back to pets as therapy, I take it people use their own pets. You don't supply them.
That's right.
And what kind of pets are we talking about? Is it only dogs and cats?
Yes. They're the most suitable.
Well, let's say I have a dog and I want to get it signed up for pets as therapy. What do I do?
Well, the dog would be checked to see that it's well trained and sociable. Also, we'd want a note from the vet to say it's in good health. Then, if that's okay, you get an official badge and there's even a special yellow coat the dog can wear if you like. And then the organiser would start arranging visits to hospitals and so on.
That's great. Thanks for coming along today. So, if you have a dog or cat and are interested in joining Pets as Therapy, you can contact Rhianna at...
Recording 3. Listen to the conversation. Answer the questions which follow. You now have 1 minute to read the questions in Section A, Recording 3, before you hear the recording. Hi, Paolo.
Oh, hi, Sally. How are things?
Okay. I wanted to have a word about the arrangements for the school dance.
Oh, have I messed things up?
Not at all. But there are just a couple of things we need to straighten out.
Right. Yeah. Can we do it at lunchtime? I really need to switch off for a few minutes.
Of course. Have you had a rough lesson?
Rough? Well, no, not like teaching some of the first-year classes.
Or two or four, particularly horrible second-year class. I've just had two periods with them.
No, it was the higher class. Nice group. It started off with a discussion of university fees, but then we started talking about different ways of learning.
Sounds interesting.
Oh, it was, it was. Keeping something like that going can be exhausting. I felt like one of these hosts on daytime TV. You know, when they have a studio audience and run around with a microphone. It really took it out of me.
Can't say I do much running around in my classroom. Anyway, what sort of things did they bring up?
Well, Michael Anderson. You know him?
Of course. Not the most exciting pupil in the school.
That's him. Well, he thinks education is far too liberal. And what pupils need is more facts, and more facts. And less discussion. Oh, and a lot more maths as well. I don't know what he's doing in a modern studies class.
I've no idea. Maybe he wants to go into politics.
Well, if he does, I can guess which party. Anyway, then Sophie O'Connor started arguing with him. I don't think these two like each other.
Well, they're certainly poles apart politically.
And she made the point that in Japan, there's been a lot of criticism of the school system for its focus on rote learning over independent thinking, and that there were calls there to try to introduce more creativity into the syllabus.
Oh, I don't think the Japanese would want to give away what they have now. Japan has high literacy rates. In fact, not being able to read is almost unknown, unlike here. Japan also scores well internationally in maths and science, and the proportion of school pupils going on to university is one of the highest in the world. Japan's education system fueled the economic miracle after the Second World War, and I'd say that companies like Sony and Nintendo are quite imaginative and creative.
Wow, you sound like you're making a speech.
Actually, I'm doing a workshop on Saturday. I've been learning my script. But isn't there a Japanese pupil in the higher class? Kenji...
Yes, Kenji Takahashi. He spoke up at one point and he was really interesting. Of course, he came here when he was 8, so he doesn't have much direct experience or a deep knowledge of the Japanese system. But he did make the point that the schools there try to develop independence in the pupils. They teach them how to walk to school safely, how to pack for field trips and so on.
That's not quite the same as teaching independent thinking.
No, but it's possibly something we could have a look at. It might mean not so many pupils being delivered by car. Anyway, I'd better go and get organised for the next lot. Nice talking to you, Sally.
Sure. See ya. Hi, Paolo.
Oh, hi, Sally. How are things?
Okay. I wanted to have a word about the arrangements for the school dance.
Oh, have I messed things up?
Not at all, but there are just a couple of things we need to straighten out.
Right, yeah. Can we do it at lunchtime? I really need to switch off for a few minutes.
Of course. Have you had a rough lesson?
Rough? Well, no, not like teaching some of the first-year classes.
Or two or four, particularly horrible second-year class. I've just had two periods with them.
No, it was the higher class. Nice group. It started off with a discussion of university fees, but then we started talking about different ways of learning.
Sounds interesting.
Oh, it was, it was. Keeping something like that going can be exhausting. I felt like one of these hosts on daytime TV, you know, when they have a studio audience and run around with a microphone. It really took it out of me.
Can't say I do much running around in my classroom. Anyway, what sort of things did they bring up?
Well, Michael Anderson. You know him?
Of course. Not the most exciting pupil in the school.
That's him. Well, he thinks education is far too liberal. And what pupils need is more facts, and more facts. And less discussion. Oh, and a lot more maths as well. I don't know what he's doing in a modern studies class.
I've no idea. Maybe he wants to go into politics.
Well, if he does, I can guess which party. Anyway, then Sophie O'Connor started arguing with him. I don't think these two like each other.
Well, they're certainly poles apart politically.
And she made the point that in Japan, there's been a lot of criticism of the school system for its focus on rote learning over independent thinking, and that there were calls there to try to introduce more creativity into the syllabus.
Oh, I don't think the Japanese would want to give away what they have now. Japan has high literacy rates. In fact, not being able to read is almost unknown, unlike here. Japan also scores well internationally in maths and science, and the proportion of school pupils going on to university is one of the highest in the world. Japan's education system fueled the economic miracle after the Second World War, and I'd say that companies like Sony and Nintendo are quite imaginative and creative.
Wow, you sound like you're making a speech.
Actually, I'm doing a workshop on Saturday. I've been learning my script. But isn't there a Japanese pupil in the higher class? Kenji...
Yes, Kenji Takahashi. He spoke up at one point and he was really interesting. Of course, he came here when he was 8, so he doesn't have much direct experience or a deep knowledge of the Japanese system. But he did make the point that the schools there try to develop independence in the pupils. They teach them how to walk to school safely, how to pack for field trips and so on.
That's not quite the same as teaching independent thinking.
No, but it's possibly something we could have a look at. It might mean not so many pupils being delivered by car. Anyway, I'd better go and get organised for the next lot. Nice talking to you, Sally.
Sure. See ya.
You now have 1 minute to check your answers.
This is the end of the listening test.